This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Huzzah. Welcome to a new episode of Stuck at Home with me, Cliff Dorfman, and this
me,
guy.
Again, snubbed for a Golden Globe.
Again. Get snubbed? Again. What were you up for?
I was just up for whatever they gave me. Nobody called me. I did not. I tried to. I kept my live stream on. I had a Zoom ready to be connected at whenever the proper time was for a Golden Globe to be announced, to be delivered to me, and nothing. I didn't get a call. You know, nobody was paying attention to anything going on with me. I just sat there in a suit, no pants, ready to go. Me onesie on the bottom, business suit on the top, nothing, no award, nothing.
But you watched it, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I did. I watched it because I was waiting for them to announce my name. Nothing.
See, I didn't watch it because I was so not into the whole HFP thing. But I was like, I can't. I mean, I was very glad that she won for Billie Holiday. I mean, we'll talk about all that after. But I was a little like, I'm not going to, I don't know, because of the whole, you know me. I'm weird.
Yeah.
Nancy says you look tired.
I do look tired. Well, I was just going to say, Nancy, just so you know, I didn't catch COVID, but I got my first illness since I've been in quarantine. So I caught something. I got a bug for the first time in a year. So I'm a little bit down on that, but otherwise I'm just fired up and excited to be here. Nancy, the real truth is I thought I was going to win an award yesterday and I just didn't.
He's just down about it. Should we get into it or what?
Let's get into it.
Okay. So let's do that because we have a heart out and I'm really excited to have him here. And as we're wrapping up Black History Month and we're entering into Women's History Month, it is very, very timely and wonderful to have the CEO and president of Starz Entertainment and their new initiative called Hashtag Take the Lead. So without any further ado, let's just have him on right away, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jeff Hirsch. Yes. Hey, Jeff.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on today. I'm excited to be here. Big fan, so.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. And we are big fans. I just finished watching episode 7 of American Gods right before we started this, so I'm a big subscriber, big fan. So this is great. And I want to talk about this initiative. And it is hashtag take the lead, right?
Correct. Yes, it is.
Yep. Just making sure that we say the hashtag with it, right? But before I get into this, I want to just maybe walk up real quick about how do you end up at Starz? Like what? Just a slight trajectory. Like obviously you went to college, you're living your life, but what is a small trajectory? And then I have a reason for asking, I swear.
Well, in the first chapter of my career, I spent the first 15 years post-business school at Time Warner Cable, moving all over the country, running cable systems. I was in South Carolina, Rochester, New York. I was in LA, New York City, and then ended up in the corporate office for a couple of years where Chris Albrecht, who is my boss and the previous CEO of Starz, and I crossed paths. And around 2015, when Comcast, now Charter, made an acquisition of Time Warner Cable, Chris and I had been talking about having me come to Starz as his business partner, where he was doing creative and I was really running the business, and we had a great partnership. And as I say, as rest is history at this point. So it's been a great 5 years at Starz. I think we've taken a company from, you know, a single revenue linear cable network to now a data-driven global streaming service in over 56 countries around the world. And it's, you know, really exciting. I think our programming mandate around which was the foundation of this hashtag Take the Lead, has been something I'm really excited about. And we continue to get great content with great big talent attached to it. And then I'm looking forward to having that on the network in the next year and year and a half.
It is amazing. How long ago did Starz start? Wasn't that long ago, right?
Starz has been around for 25 years.
Has it really? 25
years. I joined 5 years ago.
Feels like there was a rebranding not so long ago. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we did a rebranding about 4 years ago. You know, I think when Chris Albrecht came here about 9 or 10 years ago now, he put the company into starting to, it was a movie service. He started doing originals. At the time, I think Chris was smart to try to really go after underrepresented voices and fresh voices. I know you've had Rebecca Cutter on, who's a first time showrunner of ours with Hightown, phenomenal show that we have. And I think as we launched our app and we got first party data, what we really realized that was driving our business was women. And so we pivoted our programming strategy to this mandate of narratives by, about, and for women. And so as we've become really a network, and that's not at the exclusion of men, I think Outlander is a great example of co-viewing in the home. Mm-hmm. But as we really started to focus on putting content for a female audience on the air, it became very apparent to us that not only do we have to have, you know, great content with the, from a female point of view and a female gaze, but we had to have showrunners and writers and directors and everybody from on the screen, behind the screen, even into the office, you know, that was authentic to the cause. And as we did that, we realized in the moment that we have that we could launch this brand extension or initiative called hashtag Take the Lead, which is really our commitment to becoming a role model and showing the industry that putting, you know, 62% of our series leads are people of color, 54% of our showrunners are female, 75% of my executives that report to me are women, half of those are women of color, that putting, you know, representation on the screen, behind the screen is really good business and it's the right thing to do. And so we rolled this out because we believe that we have a social responsibility to the community to do this.
Well, yeah, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to, you know, walk the walk. Now, when you decide to, because you have to, first of all, you make the decision. I mean, you're starting this off with diverse programming, which you guys have had for a while now. That being said, what compels you, though, to say, okay, let's test ourselves. Let's pay a bunch of money to UCLA storytellers and scholars and see where we're at. Like, how does this, you know, dawn upon you? And because it's not a small undertaking by any means.
No, I think if you're going to, you know, put, you know, it's kind of walk the walk, talk the talk, that you have to have a baseline. And, you know, we could have measured ourselves, but I don't think that would have been a really good third party baseline to hold ourselves accountable. I think as much as we want to go out and hold the industry accountable for putting diversity on the camera and behind the camera in a director's chair, we have to hold ourselves accountable. And by having a third party like the wonderful UCLA Storytellers that we will do every year, it will give us a benchmark to see how we're improving. Because we're not perfect. We have a long way to go. I was very surprised by the level of female directors that we had on the show. I thought it would be in the 60s or 70%. It was in the 40s. So that's going to be a really big focus of mine in the next 12 months is to get that number up and put more women in the director's chair for all of our episodes.
So, okay. So now, and you have am I right in calling it a symposium that's coming up in April where you're going to have a bunch of people come and talk about everything you're doing?
Yeah, I think as part of this initiative, we wanted to make sure that this was an ongoing, living, breathing initiative that kept going for years and years to come. And we came up with transparency talks, which will be monthly talks. We'll bring, you know, partner with NGOs like the ACLU and the California Film Commission and UCLA, and have these talks where we not only bring up issues that either prevent or help put diversity on the screen or behind the screen, but also bring third-party panelists in from outside the industry so that we can hear a different perspective and that we can have executives who have dealt with diversity and inclusion in their industry and what they did to move that the needle in their industry as the ideas to generate ideas for us. And so it's not just our industry talking to ourselves, but it's issues in our industry with perspectives from outsiders and to help us, you know, craft solutions and answers. All of these talks, these monthly talks will culminate in a Starz Summit at the end of the year, where we'll highlight really impactful, you know, moments from the talks, bring in guest speakers and really have a celebration of women and diversity in television each year. And then we'll also obviously launch, you know, announce the study with UCLA and what the next year study looks like and use that as a launching pad for the data.
Now, I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, but you are right now, as far as I know, the only people who are doing this. I haven't heard of a study like this on any other network.
You know, I think Netflix just came out yesterday with USC and launched a study of looking at themselves and what they did. And so other than that, I think we were the first to do it. Netflix, I think, has followed suit, and I applaud them for, you know, looking at themselves and taking a hard look at what they're doing and, again, setting a benchmark to how to improve as we've done. But I think it's important, again, you can't, you know, for me as a business guy, you can't fix a problem unless you know what it looks like. And this was the first way for us to determine, you know, where we were good, where we were bad, and where we needed to improve.
Yeah. Now, before you, you know, started any of this, I think there was a lot to be said about, you know, how you chose your programming. And I think the start of that we saw definitely with Power. And now you have a four-quarter, like different shows. How do you decide to make that sort of a revolving viewing where all the people who want to watch this show and love this show get, you know, four quarters of different shows involved there? How is this a decision and how did it come about?
Well, first, I think we defined our programming mandate around, you know, narratives for and by and about women and underrepresented audiences. And we saw, you know, if you can, social media is a great marketing engine and a good feedback loop. And when the end of Power here came, people would say, oh my God, you know, what's next? And, you know, we would try to put more shows on that were similar, but we never really got there. And in the digital world, it's unlike my cable background where you had to call a truck and call the call center to disconnect and then call it, it's hard to connect and disconnect. In the digital world, you can click in and click out pretty easily. And so we saw, you know, churn based on the end of Power. And, you know, Courtney Kemp and 50 had this great idea of doing the kind of Power universe, like the Marvel universe, although most everybody in Marvel's good and most everybody in Power is bad. And we just launched our first spinoff, Ghost. It had a record performance for the first season. We've already greenlit to come back for season two. We've got the Raising Kanan coming this summer, which is the 50 character at 15 in Jamaica, Queens, in 1990 New York. The music's amazing. The clothing's amazing. That's a great story. Patina Miller will play his mom, and it's Patina Miller teaching 50 how to become a gangster, and it's spectacular. And then we're now shooting the Joseph Core spinoff in an unnamed city because I don't want to give it away, which will be the third spinoff. And that, you know, Joe is a huge fan favorite, and that storyline's amazing. And I love reading those scripts. And so, and then we have 50 coming in with EMF, which is the big meat story out of Detroit, the two brothers becoming, you know, the biggest drug dealers in America, and follow them through Atlanta to LA and music. We've got a great show called Run the World with Lionsgate TV, which is four African-American women in Harlem basically running the world. And it's as funny as anything's ever been on television. I'm super excited to get that on the air. And then we, working with Lionsgate, we took Blindspotting the movie and turned it into a series. And that is really, it's hard to explain it until you see it, but it's such a special show that I'm really excited to get that on the network. And so if you think about everything I just talked about, we've got something every week, 52 weeks a year, for that audience. And then on the other side of that, you have the Outlander audience, which is our other core demo. We've done The White Queen, The White Princess, The Spanish Princess. We're shooting Becoming Elizabeth in London right now, which is another queen. I call them great women history. We're going to do the Catherine de' Medici story, which we'll start shooting in France in the next couple of months. We've got great comedy, a Sharon Horgan half hour that Courtney Cox and Greg Kinnear are going to lead, which is, you know, really just unique, new for the network. And then last week, we just announced a Watergate drama, which you would say it's another boarding Watergate drama. But this is through the eyes of Martha Mitchell. I don't think anybody has really told the story about her role in exposing Watergate for what it was. And it's a really wonderful story of Martha Mitchell and her struggle between telling the truth and losing her family. Because remember, the country came, she you know, testified in front of Congress, and the country came down on her. And she lost her family because of it. And we were lucky enough to get Julia Roberts to play Martha Mitchell and Sean Penn to play John Mitchell. And so a lot of really great content coming for the fan base. And again, all of it fits within this programming mandate under the focus of Take the Lead. It's stories, you know, from the female point of view, with great characters directed and run by women. And we're really excited about what's coming up the network in the next year. And it's Take the Lead is the foundation of all this. It's our guiding principle. We make decisions on content based on that. And it's been really, I'm super passionate about what we're doing. I think it's the right thing for the community and for the business. And it's the right thing for our, most importantly, our fan base.
Oh, it's beyond right. It's cutting edge and it's what's needed to happen for the longest time. And it just makes me giddy. I mean, I know I'm being very calm because you get me a little nervous, Jeff. I'm not going to lie. You're a formidable dude. You know, I mean, like, I'm a little like,
I know,
oh,
wait,
I
don't that, but
no, I could see like how you could fire someone easy. Like, I have no doubt. I'm like sitting here, I'm like, are you going to fire me any moment? Because I'm a little nervous. That being said, let me ask you a question. When you are now, so you have these mandates set, you're pushing forward in a way that I honestly, you're blowing my mind. What are you looking for? Let me ask you two things. What are you looking for when you're looking for female driven content, when someone's coming in to pitch to you? And what are you looking for in your women executives as you're looking to hire? Is there certain things that are, you know, spanning the brand?
Two good questions. I'll take the second one first. I don't really, I kind of am looking for the best executive to fill the role. And that's the first and foremost. And I've been lucky enough to have, you know, 5 or 6 female executives that I think are some of the best in the business. And we've got lucky that way. And they really developed into great executives in each of their disciplines. So again, we're looking to hire the best person for the job, always with an eye on diversity and inclusion, because it's who we are and what we do. And we have to be authentic from the front of the screen through to the office. But again, it's the best executive, and that's what we're looking for. And that means sometimes that we see a very raw, great, talented executive that we can help grow. And that's part of our responsibility. And, you know, 80% of my job is to, you know, hire good people, set great direction, and let them be successful and grow. And I'm more of a coach than anything else. And in terms of what we're looking for, you know, we have a show called Heels that we've announced. That's a lot like Friday Night Lights. It's two brothers. It's a Cain and Abel story. It's amateur wrestling in the South. Michael Waldron wrote it. It's emotional. It's a Southern family drama.
But the Arrow guy, right?
Michael Waldron from Starburns Industries.
Yeah. Yes. And the lead who used to be Arrow, right? Steven?
Yeah, Steven. Yeah. But on paper, you'd say, oh, it's two guys. It's two brothers. This is not a show for us. But it's a real struggle. It's a family drama. It's a Cain and Abel story. It's a very emotional story. And we think it's, you know, a lot like Friday Night Lights, but, you know, with amateur wrestling, which is a perfect fit for our stuff. So, you know, it's a nuance, and it's hard. It's very hard because it doesn't, you know, we're not just looking for a female lead with a story. It's mm-hmm. There's got to be an emotional bones to it. There's got to be a great point of view. There has to be, you know, a great, you know, deep character relationship. I think what we're looking for now is those stories, those unique stories that are told by, you know, fresh voices. You know, Rebecca Cutter is a great example. Hightown is, I think, as good as anything on TV. It's a diverse cast. I'm from the Cape, so I love the fact it's set on the Cape. And Rebecca was a first-time showrunner. And, you know, Courtney Kemp, season one of Power, was a first-time showrunner as well. So, you know, those fresh voices are really important to us because I think, you know, I think some people confuse content as being a commodity. Mm-hmm. And it's not. And there's a different point of view. There's a different angle. We've got a show that we haven't announced yet from a, you know, 26-year-old writer who, when I read the script, was blown. I was impressed with what I read all year. And, you know, she actually went to Penn undergraduate. And I made the mistake of asking her what year she graduated. So I won't even tell you. But, you know, I'm excited to get that show on the air. And she's a first-time showrunner. And so that's what we're looking for is, you know, fresh ideas, fresh voices, you know, coming from that audience that really hits our take the lead mandate.
And just to be clear for our audience too, when you say, you know, I know what you mean, but I want to just be clear about it. When you say a first time showrunner, what you're saying is that Starz is letting these creators, you are letting these creators who have never run a room, you're letting them run these rooms and take the show over and make their creative vision the vision. That's a yes, right?
Absolutely. Katori Hall and P-Valley is another example. And, you know, talking about the Globes last night, I think P-Valley should have been in every category on the Globes and dramas last night. And it's disappointing to me that it wasn't, because I think that show, you know, broke, you know, was another, you know, record-breaking show in terms of fresh perspective on television. And it should have been recognized that way. Now, it is being recognized at the NAACP Awards with 6 nominations, and we're excited to go there and see the show be obviously rewarded for the great work that it's done.
Yes. And now you seamlessly gave me my sequitur, which is my next question, which is, I'm going to ask you overall, what are your thoughts about this whole HFP thing? I mean, ours have been very blatant and very loud over here, but I'm curious to hear what you think.
You know, I won't really talk about other people's organizations. What I will say is that there's a reason why we're doing hashtag take the lead and standing up what we think is our responsibility to the community to highlight how well we've put diversity on the screen, behind the screen, and in the office. And if we can, and if our talks that we talked about earlier can help, you know, change any other part of the industry to improve what we think we're taking the lead on, then we've been successful in what we're trying to do here. And so I hope that we have, you know, our social responsibility to the community and the example that we're setting actually impacts the rest of the community in a big way.
Yeah, you're very good, Jeff. I have to say, the way you choose your words, it's no wonder that you are exactly where you are in this business and with Stars as a whole and with Take the Lead. So what I want to ask you, because you brought something up that I find interesting and I've been sort of talking about for a while, which is you started in cable, right? You started in physical boxes, running lines. Now, I have been a proponent for a while that this is going out. We are going to see the end of DirecTV like Blockbuster, the end of Spectrum, and we're going to be just a la carte streaming. Do you have a forecast for this? And if you do, what is your, you know, plan?
Well, look, I'm a, you know, retired cable loyalist, so I think cable will always be there in some form or another. Don't forget, to get your broadband connection, you have to go through a cable operator, and I think that's a phenomenal service, and that last mile in the home is a really unique thing. Mm-hmm. But whether it's, you know, and I think if I wear my cable hat, whether it's streaming or it's old coax, it's distribution, right? And so the cable companies can stream, whether it's broadband in a bunch of our apps that they provide or it's their video service. I think there will always be a role for wonderful companies like Spectrum and our partners at Comcast. Obviously, satellite's a little more challenged because they don't have that broadband connectivity that the cable operators do. But, you know, if you think about what the cable business has done, that's they buried all those lines and built broadband based on private investment. And so you got to give, as much as I think people don't like the service, because I get that, I've lived it, you know, they've created a wonderful, you know, broadband and cable modems and DOCSIS 1.0 and 2.0. And even the video product was, at the time before they priced it out, was a really compelling offer. You get a lot of different disparate cable channels in one simple place. And so I do think the business is changing. I think it's generational. I mean, if I had to say to my mother today to go buy an Amazon Fire Stick, find the HDMI port in the TV, plug it in, download Amazon, and download Stars to get Outlander, she wouldn't watch the show, right? And so,
same with my mom.
Right. So, but I know a lot of friends that just download the app and watch the show. So I think there's always going to be a role for some kind of cable distribution, whether it's a full video service or just broadband. It's yet to be determined. But they provide a wonderful role. We, you know, we've got a lot of customers on the traditional cable side, like my mother, and they're great customers. And so we think there's a lot of upside on the traditional business for Stars still as well. We're not fully penetrated like a Discovery Network or an AMC. We've got a lot of upside. And, you know, globally, I think same thing. I think, you know, in the 56 countries we're in outside the US, we've got an app. We're on different partners, but it's really, there's a lot of consumer choice, and customers like to watch on traditional cable, or they like to watch on satellite, or they like watch on our app or on Amazon. And Stars needs to be in every one of those places so that a consumer wants to see us. We're there.
Right. But you talk about consumer choice, which is always interesting to me. So how does it fit into a business model such as yours or your empire, let's say, where you have this now new idea of like, okay, there's a show I want to watch on Stars, so I'm going to take $8.99 a month and I'm going to wait till it's over, binge it for a month, and then cancel my subscription. So are you working that into your business model as far as how you're programming and you know, moving forward branding-wise?
Yeah, the digital world has really made us have to become smarter about scheduling and how you put content on the air. And as we talked about, part of the reason why it was important to get all those power franchises is that we could run them back to back to back, so that a power customer who watches Ghost then moves into Force, then moves into Kanan, then moves into BMF, then comes back to Ghost. And so we don't have people disconnecting because we're always servicing something that they want to watch. And it's really important to have a consistent flow of content for each of the consumers that we're serving. And we've used first party data, which we've never had before. I mean, before the cable operators just used to send us a check-in saying, this is how many customers you had. Now our app, we get so much first-party data, it's really helped inform our scheduling and our programming slate. And so, you know, I would say scheduling for retention is probably the most important thing you can do in the digital world these days.
And that's where the four-quarter concept really comes from, huh? A genius. Jason, does this mean we're done? We have to be done?
Yeah, I'm just giving Jeff his red light. So he...
Okay. Well, Jeff, I'm thrilled. If I had to ask you just one more thing, where do you see our business in 5 years? Just, I know it's a big question, but just in a small way, just, you know, do you see us thriving? Do you see it all, you know, as streaming? Just curious. I know I have to let you go, but I'm dying to know this.
You know, look, I think we're continue as we get through the pandemic. We'll, you know, I think, you know, desire to go to theaters and see big budget movies will come back even stronger. The model has changed. I think the PVOD model is additive, not cannibalistic to the traditional theater model. And so I think that will help everybody, which means more people will put more content on the air and have more independent producers making content with these new business models on the movie side. I think television continues. I mean, if you look at the content, I mean, it's hard to keep up with such great stuff and that's getting on television these days. And so I think that will continue. And I think it will become global. I think Netflix has done a nice job of putting shows like Narcos and Lupin from all over the world on the US and vice versa. And I think it will shrink that, you know, the digital environment that we're in will shrink the world and get access to much more content, whether it's from India or from Spain or from LATAM in the US and vice versa. And so globalization, I think, of our business is the next kind of big phase. So it's exciting. We've got shows being produced in Spain, you know, in India, the UK, and LATAM, and we're happy to bring those everywhere in the world because we think they'll play globally.
I mean, you are a fascinating man. What you've done is amazing. Take the Lead is just everything we want this business to be, and I can't thank you enough for taking your valuable time to be here with us today and answer these questions. I'm just thrilled.
Well, thanks for having me. And Chuck, we have a new RBG documentary on Starz that starts today. So everybody, it's fantastic. And I think people should check it out. So
right on.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for everything you do.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Hirsch. Yeah. I mean, that's, I know I don't get a lot of time with a guy like that because, you know, he's running a fucking empire.
Yeah.
I know. Getting cursed once.
Look at that. Like he has time to shave though. Like, look at that. CEO looks actually like a CEO. Like I look like I'm the CEO of like an Amish granary.
You know, it's interesting because I really wasn't kidding. It's a different kind of, I've never been nervous like that. And I really wanted to make sure I did a good, I was like prepared. I wanted to do a good interview, of course, but there's an interesting thing that happens when you're with someone at that level, mm-hmm. you know, at that ilk, who's got so much at their fingertips and they're dealing on so many different, you know, spectrums at once, no pun intended, that I was a little like, oh, all right, I'm just going to.
He knows what he's doing. You could tell his time is. Well, but that's the beauty of the stuff that he's doing, right? Like he's taking the time out to talk about this thing that's really important, this Take the Lead. So you know that this is a priority for him, right? I'm willing to guess Mr. Hirsch doesn't go on podcasts just to shoot the shit. Although I heard that he has a lot of really interesting fan theories about American Gods. Even though it's already a book, you don't need to come up with theories.
Really?
I'm just making that shit up.
Okay. You gotta go. But meanwhile, you know what I do want to do and take a moment just to read this? Because with the Take the Lead initiative that they did in this report, the highlights of it, on screen, Starz series leads are 57.9% women with 63.2% people of color. Behind the camera, they're 54.6% women with 45.5% people of color. And leadership is 75% women with 50% people of color. I mean, if that's not walking the walk, what is?
Absolutely.
And he's still trying to improve it.
Right. And he also scares the shit out of you. I need to shave.
Did you see? I'm a little scared. Yeah. I really was like, are you going to fire me at any minute now? Is that what's going to happen? Because he's a formidable motherfucker.
He's good. Smart. He's smart and he knows what he's talking about. That's what you can get from it. And I'm just really impressed with all the stuff that he's doing. I do appreciate the, you know, that drive. We talk a lot about it here, you know, and I also appreciate that he doesn't talk about other people's things and he's just really proud of what he does. Yes. But we can shit all over the Hollywood Foreign Press, which they did a little bit on their own yesterday. I mean, they didn't, you know, they let, I know you didn't get to see it yet, but Amy.
No, I was looking forward to this. Not, I'm interrupting you only for this reason. I actually, aside from, you know, my reasoning for not watching it, I was looking forward to you walking me through what happened so we can do it for our viewers and listeners. How do you like that?
It sounds like what thing. I'd say if my dog ate my homework, but I am.
No, just give me the highlights. No, I really mean it. My dog didn't eat my homework. I'm ready.
I was like, I always just thought it'd be better if you told me all the answers.
No, I told me like, okay, fine. I mean, like we could have fun. We can have fun with it. He'd be like, who do you think won that? I'd be like, I'll tell you who I think won. And then you can tell me who won. The point is that I'm not thrilled with what they did. You know this. So please continue with what you were saying, because it was much better than what I said.
No, I was just saying, like, I mean, it's just, it's when you can come out with stuff like that, fully proud and locked in and ready to go, that really kind of shows what you're made of, right? Like, it didn't, it wasn't like, oh, look, there's this, all this problem, we're going to set this thing up and go. It's like, hey, listen, we're already doing it. We want to see just where we land within the spectrum of things, because we're proud of where we are and we feel like we could do even better. And I respect that. I think that that's the place we always should be looking. Like, I like to look at Starburns Audio as a very inclusive place, you know, but it takes kind of digging deep into it, looking through all the pieces, you know, whether, you know, what I feel isn't always what's real. And it's nice to see a company, a corporation, a media outlet, a creator come out and actually analyze in that piece, because it can always come out surprising. I've done this before. It's like, oh no, we're good. And then I look and it's like, oh no, we're not. We celebrate a few victories, but we don't necessarily recognize the greater scheme. And so I just really appreciate that I'm taking that time.
Well, yeah, and you too. Oh, hey, Tim, what's up? And Dan, thank you for what you said. I appreciate it. And let me say, you know, it's a very hard thing to do, especially when you're successful and you have a good gig going. You know, if you have a company running, it's very hard to dig in and look and be like, where are we, you know, failing, or where are we able to pick up? And that's the hardest thing to do in success, especially.
Well, yeah. And I think that's a perspective of a, you know, I can't speak for him directly, but as a, you know, as a leader of a company, it's not even where are we failing. It's like always just pursuing better, right? It's not even a matter of whether we're success or failure. It's always just, hey, listen, we got to go where you know, we want to be on the right side of history, and constantly working and evaluating and iterating through until you find that thing. And then eventually that'll evolve a little bit too. And so you want to just make sure you're always staying with it. And that's somebody who's active and working towards it. So applause for hashtag take the lead. Really excited to have that. Thank you so much, Jeff. And then I would also like you to put your money where your balls are. with MeUndies, MeUndies.com, offer code STUCK. You can spend a little bit of money on keeping your nether regions as soft and as comfortable as possible. You know, they're still super exciting. They're still putting in that feel free lace, which doesn't come on the boys' underwear, which means I might need to make a couple choices in my underwear shopping. But I mean, everything's looking beautiful over there. Still made with the micromodal. Everything is still soft, and they've got a whole bunch of new patterns, including these really cute ones with sloths on it, just like laying around and chilling. When I first saw them, I thought they were just lazy elephants, which I would also have accepted, but sloths work for me too.
Listen, I think that the reason they choose sloths is because once you put them on, you really lose some.
Yeah, I just want to,
like, I could just hang out here.
I just hang out here in my softness. Like, the sloth's only wearing, which is weird because the sloth in these particular underpants is only wearing flowers on its head, which would be interesting. I feel like if you really want to like double support it, you put the sloth in some underpants too, so he's soft and sleepy. That's free advice for you, MeUndies. I'm just the CEO of a podcast network. I don't really know what's going on in the underwear streets, but underpants sloths, I'm just saying. Just go for it. Give it a shot.
Right. And that is, again, the micromodal technology. It's sustainable beechwood trees, pulp to yarn. I'm not going to do my thing because it was so good today. It's just, I don't even want to step too much on it. $19.99, right? For the membership, free shipping. If you don't like it, just tell them you don't like it. They'll give you your money back. They don't even want, believe me, they don't want the underwear back.
No, that nobody wants it. Nobody wants your dirty underpants. I know they're soft. Right. Keep them.
Yes. So MeUndies.com, offer code STUCK. 15% off. Just get soft. That's all. Right. Get soft. So what do you want to do? Do you want to go through some news? You want to talk about the Globes? There's a lot to go through. And by the way, I did my homework. I'm ready. Even though I didn't watch it, I know what's going on.
I didn't say you didn't. I just said that if you were going, hey, you could surprise me with the answers. I was like, all right, I can.
I think it came out wrong. I think I'm still a little nervous from Jeff Hirsch. I think that's what happened.
No worries. All right. So do you want to start getting into these? You want to talk about some winners, losers?
I'd love to, unless there's some news we want to go through first.
I mean, the news is that the this Globes. Thing called the Golden Globes, the most one of the bigger awards shows about content was on last night, and I'm going to tell you all about it.
No, we're going to tell you about it. What did you think of the show? That's what I want to know.
It was fine. I mean, it was fine. It was fine. I don't like award shows at all anyway. I thought that Tina and Amy did a good job as best you could. I'm confused by why all these things exist still. I don't understand the methodology for all the different. Okay, so for example, there is a best actor in a motion picture drama. There's best actor in a comedy musical, and then there's a best actor in any motion picture. I don't understand what that means.
Did someone take the time? Because you're right, it doesn't make any sense. And then they make them these categories very confusing. Best television limited series, anthology series, a motion picture made for television. It's like, okay, what? How does this? What are the delineations for these sections?
I have no. They kind of gave it a little bit of a try, but they really didn't. I mean, here's the thing about the awards. I don't believe that there's anything at all that is real. I think that the Hollywood Foreign Press makes exactly as many awards available as they need seats to fill, and just decides, okay, well, this is a limited series now, and we don't have somebody here, or hey, we need to offer up another person a slot. Oh, well, they were in a TV series, like they were in a show that was only 6 episodes. So let's do best actress in a 6 episode arc, you know, sci-fi show, right? Like, I feel like half of this is the MTV Music Awards. It's like best upside down kiss goes to Spider-Man and Kristen Dunst, right? Like, I feel like that's kind of how they do these.
You're not wrong. So what did you think about The Crown winning best TV series drama over Lovecraft?
I mean, I think that based on your and Brandon's write-up that it deserved it. I mean, it bores me to tears, but I mean, overall, I mean, this show is the show, right? Like, this is the godfather of television. So I think that that's probably the right call if you're into TV, but not for me.
So who would you have chosen?
I mean, I'd take Lovecraft in a second.
You would have taken Lovecraft over Ozark, you know, obviously over Ratched, even over Mandalorian, though. Because you're a big Mandalorian.
I was a bigger fan of the second season than I was of the first. I liked it. I hated the first season, and I liked the second season. I think that that's where you could put me on. It was not the best TV ever. There's lots better, and I think Lovecraft Country was much, much better. I still don't see the appeal in all. Like, I know these are the ones that we always are that we differ on. Like, I understand why Ozark hits some lists. I don't feel like it's that original in comparison to a lot of the stuff that's already come out. So I don't see it as one of those. To me, it's not as prestige. It feels, you know, it feels too much like the things that have kind of come recently before it on television to me, which is why Lovecraft to me is such an important and winner, is because there's nothing that's ever been on television like it before.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't disagree with you. I will say that, you know, what The Crown does, you know, I do agree with that award.
Yeah,
I do. And I'll tell you, I know you agree with the next one being Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tough with the comedy stuff. I really love Schitt's Creek. There's so many comedies that I love. I can't complain about Schitt's Creek. It's tough. I don't think that season was their best season. It's the most fan fulfilling season, and they should have got it later. But
Ted Lasso? I mean, I would have gone with Ted Lasso.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really would have. Now, that being said, you know, Schitt's Creek, they're great. They did an amazing job. I just wonder if they actually voted for Emily in Paris, and then after all the hubbub, they're like, oh, we can't have that win. We're already busted. We gotta, we gotta.
Well, they always have one like that. I mean, they had that. What is it? The Tourist. I remember was a real like weird one that came up. Was it like?
Oh,
I
yeah, mean, was it the night
with
manager?
Johnny Depp?
I don't think
Tourist with Johnny Depp. It came out and they nominated it for a bunch of things. It came out in, this is a while ago, 2010, but it was like 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, 37% Metacritic, but it got like nominated for a bunch of stuff at the Golden Globes. So I feel like, you know, those are the kind that tell you what, you know, kind of what a movie is like. This is why I say like, they don't, really care. You know, awards nominated for the 3 Golden Globe Awards, Best Musical or Comedy. Depp is an actor. Angelina Jolie is an actress.
Right. Now, you know, again, I go with, I love small acts, though I would say, now, again, I don't understand this category because, you know, I brought it up before, anthology series or motion picture made for television. Those are two different things entirely, FYI. Right. You know, and small acts should be in its own category. You know, I guess it's an anthology series, but they really are motion pictures made for television. And the rest of them are all anthology series, meaning that they're not going to make another one, right? They're just, is the season.
This is the season. And it's also a weird one because they're an anthology series. But like, if you'd release these as indie movies, they're just movies.
Right.
Right? Am I wrong? Like, these
are just
movies.
No, you're totally right. You're totally
like,
right.
They were made and they were on television, but like, these are movies that like we were great. Steve McQueen was willing to do and put in an anthology series. It's just, two of them were competed in the Cannes Film Festival. Like they don't let TV shows compete in the, in the film part of the festival because these are movies. So like, this is again, one of those times where it's like, okay, well, we're just going to nitpick it. Like we need to figure out how to put some inclusionary shows in here and that's how we're going to do it. But it doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't make sense. And by the way, it didn't save them. You know, it didn't, you know, oh, we'll put small acts in. No, it's not. You guys are fucked. This is not, you know, this is not going to happen. This is time's up on this. And I think, you know, do you think we'll see a change next year?
Yeah, I mean, there has to be, right? Like, maybe there isn't, but like, I feel like they tried to, the interesting part about this for this time was if you did a really top level kind of survey over the Golden Globes, you might think that it was fairly inclusive this year, right? Like you have like at the top level shows, you have a few, you know, black and brown shows. You have a few female driven shows up there near the top of the list. But as you dig it in any way deep into these things, you find that that's a very shallow and hollow version of what was really kind of going on. And so this is that call out where they actually go, okay, we see it, or we have to see it. Like,
I don't think these two.
Yeah. And I don't think you can get away with it as much anymore. Maybe you can, maybe the Oscars will really prove to me that nothing's changed. Just go back to, feeling bad about it all, but yeah, God. It might as well. But in the short term, I mean, you look at some of these awards, you do see that there were, you know, some really strong performances that were recognized. You see a lot that weren't, which is very unfortunate, but it is definitely, you know, I just can't believe, I mean, and again, I'm probably just a little bit of an optimist. I just can't believe that you can get this much shit and just make no changes and see something change, at least right now. I don't think people, I don't think that, the Gen Z kids are going to let things slide the way the rest of us did all these years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the, you know, for example, best actress, and we talked about this, but again, best actress in a drama, right? Series, it's all white, all white. Like, you know, and you know, I would have picked Olivia Colman. Go on.
Best television series, comedy or musicals, as white as it gets, right? You got Schitt's Creek, Emily in Paris, Flight Attendant, The Great, and Ted Lasso. I mean, Ted Lasso has the most black and brown people, and they're just side characters, soccer players, right? Mm-hmm. But Schitt's Creek is all white. Emily in Paris, I don't know. Flight Attendant is pretty white with a little Rosie Perez thrown in there. Mm-hmm. And The Great is about Russians. French Russians or English Russians. Right. It's as white as it gets. It's a very white category that didn't have to be. You know, there are a few pieces like that are in here, and that's where it goes. That's where you really see the trouble here, which is that people aren't really either people aren't really looking or I don't know. It's troubling, and I really hope that it changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are looking now, that's for sure. There's been a lot of posts. And again, you see the same thing in the best actor, you know, for a TV series drama. And, you know, Josh O'Connor, I thought he did a great job as Prince Charles. I really did, you know this. But, you know, there's a lot of slots there. Matthew Reese as Perry Mason. I mean, that show is unwatchable, let alone a best performance. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think things do have to change. I mean, Catherine O'Hara, Schitt's Creek, she's great. Though, could you have filled that, you know, category with some different faces? Yeah. You could have.
Yeah.
You know, and on and on. So, but I know, you know, we're both very excited about Jason Sudeikis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very happy. I mean, and that's the, not irony, but it's kind of the painful portion of all this. Yeah. I'm super glad Jason Sudeikis won. I'm really happy about a lot of these, you know, in an isolated way. Mm-hmm. Catherine O'Hara is so funny. I don't know how you pick anybody else, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, Ted Lasso is great. And he provided something, but you know, and Don Cheadle was also very, very funny in a season of, Black Monday that kind of got separated into two, that lost a lot of momentum coming out into COVID.
Yeah, I think that hurt it.
And it hurt it real bad. But you know, I still believe, like, I'd rather be a little bit disappointed that Jason Sudeikis didn't win and see a lot more, you know, pull out some real, you know, really, you don't have to dig that deep to find great performances in comedy and other places that just kind of just gets straight up overlooked. And that's the part that gets me. It gets me that we can't really dig deep enough
and fill these slots the right way.
Yeah. Which they could have been. I mean, could have.
You're right. I mean, look, John Boyega winning for Small Axe. Great. You know, I mean, but now there's four other things there, slots there that you could have filled in a bit of a different way. And especially like Donald Sutherland for The Undoing, I mean, you know, there's another better show and better actor to put there. You know how I felt about Anya Taylor-Joy and her performance in The Queen's Gambit and her performance overall. I think her beating Cate Blanchett, okay, sure. I didn't really love that show. But again, don't you think we could have put a lot of other...
Yeah, there just could have been some more interesting choices. I don't think you could have not put What's-Her-Face from King's Gambit in there. I mean, that was one of those shows. I feel like the Hollywood Foreign Press Association has as much credibility to me as the People's Choice Awards when it comes to like their selectioning. And so I feel like of course they're going to pick the Queen's Gambit because that's a show that might, you know, that people are talking about and could get a little ratings.
Right. I think, you know, and I've heard it said before, you know, they're trying to throw the best party.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, they had this is the one year they had the chance to like not worry about the party. Right.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, I know I've been going through the winners or anything, but do you want to,
Yeah, keep going.
Oh, you know, I was just, because I felt like I didn't do my homework.
I just messed with you.
No, I liked it. I liked it. I feel like, again, you know, we get to these things like, okay, so best performance by an actor in a limited series, anthology series, or motion picture made for television. Okay, so I don't know where to start. I thought Ethan Hawke was far better than anyone else. You know, in that category. And I saw all of these, or at least, you know, most I tried.
I knew Mark Ruffalo was going to win. I could have told you that one.
Now why?
Because he's playing twins and he's sad.
Well, Mark Ruffalo, in fairness, is always sad.
Yeah. I mean, he was happy in that one where he's jumping around in his underpants. The one with the memories.
Well, that's the one where he had the bipolar disorder.
The Secrets of the Spotless Mind, when he's just hanging out, helping... What's her face? That's him, right?
Yeah, but he didn't have bipolar in that?
No, he's just jumping around on the bed, like helping happy. Get rid of all the other person's memories. Yeah.
Wait, he's talking about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
Yeah.
Right, but that was before he was Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
When did he turn into Mark Ruffalo? Like, just so I know Ruffalo. So I can make sure. Yeah.
You can count on me with Laura Linney.
Oh, okay. So I have never really known Mark Ruffalo. All I really knew about Mark Ruffalo was 13 going on 30. Maybe Zodiac, Eternal Sunshine, and then Hulk. Maybe, Now You See Me, Now You Don't, maybe. Then that was around the same time as the other one. So
yeah, he's not those happy are the, in that.
Hulk? No, not till the end, and not until he's like a CGI Hulk. Then he's happy.
Now, I don't know. Did you get to see Nomadland yet?
No, not interesting to me at all. I guess I got to see it, but no.
I watched it. I liked it. I would have not picked that over Mank. I have to say.
Of these five, you would have picked Mank, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know how I feel about Trial of the Chicago 7. Now, Promising Young Woman was very close to Mank for me. You know, they're just so different. You know, it's really almost hard to put them against each other, but okay. you know, I don't know, Promising Young Woman, it's like, yes, it's a drama, but there's a dark comedy sense to it. So, you know, the things that they decide to put in certain places, like, I know you said something to me, like, did you say Rosamund Pike won, right? For I Care a Lot?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a freaking comedy? Is that?
Yeah, she won for comedy or musical.
That was not a funny movie.
I didn't know it was supposed to be a comedy. I told you, I think they're going for comedy in some of this. And that's why it was felt very 90s to me. Like, it was like this thing where they're trying. Like, I think that's one of the reasons when I told you I couldn't figure out if you should watch it or not, is because I couldn't really tell what they were going for. But yeah, I guess that was supposed to be a black comedy.
Now, I got to ask you, how do you feel about Hamilton? First of all, Hamilton's not a motion picture. Second of all, okay, it's a musical, but is it a really a motion picture, or is it you put the camera in the back of the auditorium?
It's neither of those things. Yeah, it's not a. Thank God it didn't win. Thank God it didn't win, but it has music in it. The Prom is a movie musical, which also sucked. But like Hamilton was a musical that they filmed, so right. Like, you know, and I guess they did some things. They gave you some angles and stuff, so. Hopefully, maybe it was filmed twice. Maybe they went through it a few times, but I'm glad it lost.
Version together.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad it didn't win. I don't know where you justify that one winning for better or for worse. If they'd done like Hamilton, like they did with like Les Mis or Chicago or something,
right.
I could see that thing playing in this, being able to actually play in this category. But like
that might even be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they will. I think that was the original plan. I don't think that the Hamilton that they released was intended to be the definitive movie version of Hamilton. And if it was, it just goes to show you how bad that movie
is. Why we're right.
Exactly.
And why we've been right. Go ahead, come at us.
Exactly.
I love, I've watched Palm Springs at least, I think almost three times now. I mean, that is a funny
It's a very funny movie. Yeah,
I thought that should have won.
Yeah, I mean,
did you love Borat over Palm Springs? No,
but I do see the qualities of Borat over Palm Springs. I mean, I will say that Palm Springs, if you were going to go like comedy movie made for television, Palm Springs would have fit on that a little bit better than it would motion picture to me. Like, I don't think they had the right cameras even for a. to make that a movie. And maybe I'm wrong, but like I could see why Borat would win this one. It's tough. I think that of the two films, based on some of the political stuff and just what's going out there, I think Borat's the more important, if you can call it an important film. It's okay. The one with a little bit of lasting on it. I think Palm Springs will always be a fun kind of cult classic movie. And I'm glad it got nominated because it's really fun. You know, Borat brought news. There's all the Rudy Giuliani stuff that was in there. The actress that played Borat's daughter was incredible. Was it as good as Borat? No. Did Borat get nominated for anything? No. Should this have gotten nominated in any other year? No. Is it better than Hamilton, Music and the Prom? For sure.
A lot of no's right there.
Yeah, but it's better than like all the other shit that's on here except for Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And then if you're going to put up Palm Springs versus this, like, you know, I don't know. I agree with you. I think Palm Springs is the better movie, but I think Borat probably, I'm not mad at it because I think this is what, you know, probably would have won regardless.
I mean, I just think Palm Springs was funnier. Like if it's a musical or comedy, if we're just basing it on a comedy, to me, Palm Springs is the funniest out of all of those. So if you're doing the best comedy, and since Borat wasn't a musical, that's really what I'm basing it on. Now, again, but I think you're right. Everything you're saying, I don't have any gripe or argument with it whatsoever. They're very fair and solid points. And you know, this is going to be a split thing, but at least I feel like, you know, there's a decent pull there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right, I agree.
I think they didn't do it wrong. Like if the Prom or Hamilton had won this, then I'd be upset. Like if Palm Springs had won, I wouldn't be upset.
Or music.
Or music. Like I think that even I bet you that Sia just said, please don't, even if I win, just please. Say
I didn't.
Say Borat.
Anyone. Just don't say me. She got so much slack over this movie. I don't think anyone thought there was a chance in hell that they were pulling any globe out of that event last night. Now, again, so you didn't see Nomadland, but again, I did. I don't, you know, I liked it. I think it's great. I don't think she was the best director. You know, I mean, again, I would pick Fincher over that as far as just on a cinematic basis, right? We're not talking about social consciousness or anything. I think, you know, One Night in Miami is a great movie, but is it a movie that, you know, it's is going to stand? What'd you say, buddy?
It's a play and it's directed like a play.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad you got nominated. You know, thank God Sorkin didn't win. But it, to me, it was always between Emerald Fennell and David Fincher. Those were the two real filmmakers of the bunch with unique voices. Chloe Zhao made a beautiful piece of poetry that, you know, I kind of want to go see at the Metropolitan during the day.
Right. I'm just looking at some of the other stuff she's directed. I don't know her body of work very well at all. All right. So she's directed some interesting stuff, but nothing that I've ever seen.
What has she directed? You obviously looked it up, right?
Yeah. She's going to be the director of the new Eternals movie for Marvel, which is part of her push.
Yes.
She directed something called The Rider, Songs My Brother Taught Me, and something called Daughters, and then The Atlas Mountains, which looks like Glimpse of the it also looks like a show, like a movie just about mountains, which like that would play then, like at a.
So this was the culmination of her thesis on mountains.
Yeah,
was going to the Badlands.
Exactly.
What I was thrilled about is Andra Day winning. Now the United States versus Billie Holiday. Have you seen this? Because it is.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, this is Lee Daniels. You know, leave it to him. You know, he makes great stuff most of the time. I mean, even his shitty stuff is still better than most stuff out there. But this is a special, special movie. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody. So I'm going to say, but there's a twist that comes, you know, toward the end of the first act even. And I just didn't even see it coming. The acting is so fierce. Andra Day did such an amazing job. And, while I really loved Carey Mulligan in Promising Young Woman, and Viola Davis is always amazing. But Andra Day did something so special that I was like, okay, thank God. And then, posthumously, we get Chadwick Boseman.
Right.
Which was nice.
And his wife took the, lead. And this was nice. And I'm glad that they honored him here. This is, you know, I don't have anything to say about this except they made the right choice. And I mean, this is an interesting one too, because obviously Riz Ahmed did a great job.
Yes.
I'm assuming Gary Oldman did okay too on Mank, considering how much you like that movie.
Yeah, but awards.
I didn't watch the other two, I think that Chadwick definitely, you know, to be able to honor him and also to, especially in a role that's his best, is a thing that at least that could be done.
Yeah, listen, I got nothing but, you know, thumbs up on that. I mean, I thought Maria Bakalova should have won over Rosamund Pike or anyone in that category, to be quite honest. She did, I thought, the best performance of the year in comedy, I'm not even going to say other than. I thought she did an amazing job, what she did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I was a little, you know, when reading it, I was very disappointed, to be honest with you. And Rosamund Pike, I thought, was nothing. I didn't, you know how I felt about that movie. It just felt like, you know. And then you got Sasha. So, okay, so you're staying consistent, right? With what, I mean, Lin-Manuel not winning, that's okay. Dev was great in The Personal History of David Copperfield. But again, you know. I mean, at least you're staying consistent. You're happy with this, right?
Yeah, I'm fine with this. I mean, he acted a lot. I mean, can you really say Andy is acting in Palm Springs?
You can. Here's the thing. Did you feel for the character at the end? Did you want them to be together? If you did, then he's acting.
Yeah. Is he though? Or is he just like adorable?
Well, he's definitely adorable.
Like,
you know, he's like one of those
anime. Is my daughter a good actor? Or does she just like know how to like talk her face? Right when you're really mad at her and go, oh, I love you too much. I'm sorry. Here's your phone back. Because then she deserves a Golden Globe just as much as Andy Samberg. I'm not saying Andy's not learning to act and really getting in there and but he's got a natural sweetness. He's not coming out of the Andy. He's still playing the role of Andy Samberg as a charming guy. I've yet to like see him really come out of that role, except maybe the little bit he was doing of Wahlberg in those SNL commercials. Like, say hi to your mother for me. Hey, Bird. What the fuck, Bird? Say hi to your mother for me.
I want to see him do his Uncut Gems or Punch Drunk Love. I do. I want to see him do that because I think he's got a dark side. He's got a lot more in him.
I mean, he's just starting. I think that he could do whatever he wants. I think that he could get out there. I don't think Lin-Manuel Miranda can rap, much less write. James Corden's fine, I guess, and Dev Patel was good. But like Andy, I'll give it to Andy when he, you know, when he really comes out, like, and does his thing. I know that there's an award-winning performance in that guy.
Yeah, and you know, Daniel Kaluuya, that was absolutely, like, that was the right call. Not for diversity, not for anything else other than the best damn performance, period. Right. That was pretty amazing. So I had no issue there, though I see we are out of time.
Yep.
So we could probably keep going through this. We could pick it up again on Wednesday.
We'll pick it up on Wednesday. We can get through the rest of these by then. Yeah, I think we're in good shape.
Okay, well, this has been a blast. I love being back. And again, thanks to Jeff Hirsch and Stars. And hashtag Take the Lead initiative. Check that out. It's very, very fascinating. And I'd love to see more people adapting this into their business model. So until our next episode, everybody, stay safe, stay sane, stay strong. Jason Smith.
Cliff Dorfman. Take care, everybody. Love you.